to another edition of Uncommon Awareness. I'm your host, Dr. Lorraine Hurley. My website is drhurley.net, drhurley.net. So today I have David Wilcock. And if you're not already familiar with David, I think a lot of my listeners are. He's a professional lecturer, filmmaker, and researcher of ancient civilizations, consciousness science, and new paradigms of matter and energy. He has an upcoming Hollywood film called Convergence. This is his first foray into film. I cannot wait to see it. It unveils the proof that all life on Earth is united in a field of consciousness which affects our minds in fascinating ways. But he's actually here today to discuss his new book called The Synchronicity Key. I've read the book. I couldn't put it down. His first major work is entitled Source Field Investigations, and it made its way to the New York Times bestseller list. And, you know, the reason why this inspires me is to actually think that work like David's is making its way to the New York Times bestseller list. How fantastic is that? Synchronicity Key is a monumental effort of scholarship. If you don't already know about David Wilcock, you want to visit his website, divinecosmos.com. He also is a regular presenter. He has a weekly show on Gaiam TV that is by subscription. But his website is thousands of articles and pages and information that he really gives to us. And the books are kind of a condensation of what he's learned throughout his lifetime. So there's a large part of his book deals with the cyclical and spiral nature of time and experience as we know it. Another piece of his book is an examination of reincarnation. That all being said, let's bring David on. Good morning, David.
Well, hey, Lorraine. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, thanks. And I just really so appreciate you taking time out of your extraordinarily busy schedule to do this show with us. It gives me great pleasure to promote your work, number one. Super huge
pleasure.
Well,
actually, I think you're the first person who I've talked to who's read it other than the editing staff in the publishing company. So,
oh, you're kidding me.
To hear what you think, because, like, I, you know, everybody else just got it yesterday. And, you know, because it just was released on the 20th, and we're taping this the day after it came out.
Right.
So
well,
I really haven't gotten
Kathy.
To hear from anybody what they think about it. I think it came off very well. I think it's very powerful, but I'm not really sure how people are going to feel about it when they read it.
I did understand it, but also probably because I follow your work and work like yours. So it is going to be a kind of a mind blower for if somebody who is just an individual kind of living a mainstream life were to pick it up, they probably wouldn't know what to do with it, David. I'm surprised. Your publisher, actually, you should thank her because she sent me this copy a couple of weeks ago, so I had time to read it. I did. I couldn't put it down. The challenge for me in talking to you is...
It's such a huge, huge adjustment to make.
It sure is.
Because I don't really think there's anything out there remotely like this. I somehow managed to dig up original information in a field that is so saturated with repetition and the same old content that everybody keeps saying in their own words. And yet to find out that all these different ancient cultures around the world, over 30 different ancient cultures, all talked about these cycles like the age of the zodiac.
Right.
And we find out that, oh, no, this isn't just some boring old thing that they did to entertain themselves. This is probably the most significant thing we need to know because...
That there are cosmological cycles.
Yeah.
Just before you go on, I want to say this. You did an extraordinary – here's your gift, David, from my point of view, because I read an awful lot. I have a lot of people – like you say, there's a lot of regurgitation of the same old, and here's where you excel. Here's your gift, the gift of synthesis. You can marry science. You can marry the esoteric. You can marry personal experience. You take what we call – I had Dean Radin on yesterday – super normal human abilities, and you don't question them. You just work with them. So you did a fantastic job.
I sweated bullets for a whole year. The whole year of 2012, I had a total writer's block on how the heck do I write about this subject. And there were periods of time where I wrote pieces of it that were personal, where I talked about personal experiences of synchronicity, and then I'd have, like, all this hate mail come in, and I'd say, oh, my God, I can't write about myself. The haters are never going to forgive me if I write a word about myself. And it wasn't until actually the Mayan calendar end date came and went without incident, and I ended up with a shattered toe that same night, that I was able to finally get clear and say, okay, I had thought there was going to be some major ascension that could happen at the end of 2012. I had hoped that it would happen that way because I think, like many of us, I get tired of waiting for big stuff. You know, like I'd love to see disclosure. I'd love to see an open relationship forming with our galactic neighbors, which I believe are human. They're just not born on Earth.
Right.
But it's not that easy. It's not going to be that quick. And I started to realize there was a horror that I felt throughout the year 2012 as I said, you know, if we are heading into a discontinuous event at the end of the year where it's ready or not, here it comes, most people are not ready. And as we got closer and closer to it, I also said, you know, there's a whole sequence of prophecies that I've been given for many, many years, going all the way back to 1996 when I started to get prophetic data. And it always said that we were going to see the total exposure and downfall of the nasty negative stuff that's been happening on Earth. Because in a sense, what this new science reveals is that reality is far more structured than we think. There's a massive hidden agenda to reality. And the events that are happening to us, all the biggest events, including 9/11, are totally not random. They are absolutely structured, scripted by a higher intelligence for a purpose. And part of what made it so hard for me to write this book is I said, okay, how in the heck do I explain to people that wars and atrocities could be part of a divine plan?
Nah.
Because wars and atrocities involve torture, suffering, rape, and death.
That's right.
And that can't possibly be good. But what you got to realize, and what ended up generating the first half of the book, and Lorraine, since you've read it now, you know that right from the first page, I talk about the cycles that we all go through. Cycles are discussed right from the beginning when I say, one moment your life is feeling amazing and you're so happy and everything is coming up roses, and then bam, tragedy strikes and you're going through a dark night of the soul.
Right.
And I think a lot of us naively try to overlook the pain that we have, and I think that's the genesis of a lot of addictive behavior, is that we drug ourselves out of the awareness that we're in a cycle that's going to keep on hitting us with the same stuff, and we don't take the time to become aware of why the bad stuff keeps happening. So this book, actually, the whole key of it is that the bad stuff doesn't need to keep happening, but we're never going to get there if we stay in denial. And I just want to quickly point out, right before you called me to do this show, I woke up from this really crazy dream where I was in the Alcoholics Anonymous, some of the recovery rooms that I went to when I first got sober, which was back in 1992. I got a 21-year anniversary coming up on September 22nd.
Congratulations.
And, yeah, thank you. And what I saw in there was, you know, a friend of mine from college who didn't even realize that the whole back of his head was split open, right down to the bone. There was like about a 4-inch cut in the back of his head that was just hanging open, and he didn't even realize it was there. And it wasn't bleeding that much, but obviously he had to get it sewed up. And I was just trying to make him aware that his head was cut open, and he wouldn't even acknowledge it. And I'm like, dude, just go and feel your head. And what's happening now with this NSA stuff is that people are finally becoming aware that there is a wound on their head.
Right.
You know, we have to see that there's a problem before we know that it needs to be solved. And what this book is ultimately saying is that the events that are happening are not predestined, that these cycles do not automatically create the same outcome. Like, for example, you probably well remember, I mean, I think one of the most impressive parts of the book is the zodiac cycle, the age of the zodiac between Rome and the United States.
No, I'm telling you, like, see, I'm not a historian, David, and I've never been interested in, and you actually got me not only interested in history, but you managed to actually bring it into, like, we talk about timelines, and we're talking about Ascension, the Mayan calendar, and so forth. You bring it into timelines that are really extraordinary. I just wanted to say, you're right. It's amazing how we are basically running, we're a mirror.
I wrote those pages about some of those pages. I didn't discover that Hitler and Hannibal were the same character with the same face and that they did the same things at the same times in both cycles. I only figured that out at the very last minute when the book was coming together, and I managed to work it in as if I'd known it all along, and it was just part of the tapestry. But
okay.
Most of that stuff about cycles, most of the academic stuff that's in this, well, not most, I'd say maybe two-thirds of the academic content in the last part of the book, I wrote throughout most of the year 2010. And there's a strong reference to that when we discuss the Book of Daniel, which is when I deciphered the Book of Daniel prophecy and it cranked out an exact year when it was supposed to come to fruition, and I realized, oh my God, the year that I calculated the answer to the Book of Daniel prophecy was the same year that the prophecy gave. That freaked me out. How did that part hit you?
Actually, a lot. I'm gonna tell you that it hit me like a lot of things in the grouping. I found it particularly astonishing that you would refer to biblical prophecy, because there's a, how do I explain it? There's a lot of tendency in this movement to really move more towards the Eastern text and the Eastern wisdom teachings. And the fact that you were plucking things out of the Bible, it struck me as kind of like, oh my gosh. You know, like, in other words, they may have changed things. They didn't change everything. You know, there's still enough information there for us to kind of grapple with. Until I read your book, I had no concept of time, the way you describe it. This is why it was such a mind blower for me, because all of a sudden, so then certain things began to make sense. Certain things began to make a lot of sense, and it helped me to pull. When we talk about the golden age, well, there's the gold, the silver, the bronze, the iron, and we're kind of coming out of an iron, or what we call, you know, clay feet type of time in human history. Yeah, and there's a lot of really dangerous and really seemingly malevolent programs. And I've had other guests say, well, that's all being done to wake us up. Well, good, but what are we waking up to? People need guidance. People need a compass. And I feel like you provide that compass. I do.
I did my best, and I'm glad maybe we should have talked about this before we get on the air, but I'm genuinely fascinated to hear how you responded to it, because, again, you always, and I tried as much as possible not to have this happen, but there's always a risk that the writer or the creator of something, that you're too close to it and that you don't necessarily see how some people are gonna experience it. I felt that, you know, the simple fact that much in the, like in the Zen tradition, that I meditated on the blank canvas for like a year. I mean, I literally had signed this book deal. I was supposed to deliver a manuscript by February of 2012, and I just had massive total writer's block, because that's when I was going through this whole financial tyranny thing. And I was basically hearing from insiders that it had started in November, that there is this, well, I had known before there was an alliance of patriots in the U.S. military and many other nations that had banded together covertly to try to bring down financial tyranny. And
right, 160 allied nations, and one of your insiders is somebody that I'm familiar with, Drake, because I get correspondence from people that follow him. But, yeah, I just wanted to – 160 allied nations.
Well, Drake only showed
nations.
Up after I'd already been in contact with this alliance personally, and then somebody showed up who was saying the same kind of things I'd already been hearing.
Okay.
And so that's where the connection – it wasn't like Drake broke the story. It was more that he had additional information that seemed to be coming from the same place.
Okay.
But I'm actually writing a new article right now, and we'll be going right back to it after we get off the phone, where I've now traced out very clear, undeniable evidence that this alliance has been in place since at least April 1995. And, in fact, there was an insider named Sherman Skolnick who published advance warning before the 2000 election from his insiders that the whole election was going to be staged as a constitutional crisis and that there were not going to be election results at the normal time, that it was going to be this extended standoff. He had all of that written in October, and the election didn't happen until November.
Right.
So that's in there. And then I also show how in February 2001, he described that there was an imminent upcoming event that could be the most significant event in the history of the of modern era, and that the goal of this event was to completely destroy the economy and throw us into martial law, and that it was being orchestrated by British banking interests. And it's when you read this stuff, and I'm not doing a very good job of explaining it, but it's totally 9/11. I mean, absolutely, he knew 9/11 was coming.
That's right. And we just had a guest on. Oh, this is our short segment, David. We'll be back in just a moment, listeners. We were just talking about 9/11 being that one global event that would really kind of begin to consolidate global power for an elite cabal. David, did I kind of do an okay job of wrapping that up?
I was going to say that after establishing that Sherman Skolnick had insider knowledge that predicted the election crisis in 2000 and 9/11 very specifically, and you can prove that those prophecies were online before the events took place using the Internet Archive Wayback Machine at archive.org, once you establish that his insiders were real, becomes a lot more interesting to go back to April 17, 1995, when a plane, a C-21 carrying 8 high-ranking military officials, crashed in a violent, fiery explosion. And these are some really big players. And then insiders, three different groups of insiders all heard that these people were part of an alliance that was going to bring down the Federal Reserve and try to actually bring up the President of the United States on charges of treason.
Oh, yeah.
And then 2 days later, after they crashed, you have Oklahoma City bombing, in which the whole thing of the FBI building, Murrah Building in Oklahoma City being bombed, was blamed on right-wing, patriotic, gun-toting, militia-type people. And those were the people that were trying to rescue America and rescue freedom from the bad guys. So it seems in retrospect like the cabal deliberately tried to demonize the people that were standing up to them. And it's taken all these years for me to actually remember that after the book came out and be like, I got to go back and review this stuff, because here's the key. Everybody now is starting to become aware, or it basically is aware. You can't avoid it with the NSA stuff. Everybody is now aware that there is a real major global nemesis.
Right.
They're trying to turn race against race, nation against nation, gender against gender, older people against younger people, everything. They just want everybody fighting. They want everybody in chaos. They want everybody in fear. And one of the most insidious things that is not yet public knowledge is that Wall Street financed the Soviets, the Nazis, and the Americans, and the Japanese. They're behind everything.
That's right.
The big wars in the 20th century were totally fake. And we find out the reason behind it was that they wanted to take everybody's gold. Every time they invaded a country, they took the gold, and they put it on, quote-unquote, deposit with the Federal Reserve. And why would they do that? Well, turns out that by taking all the gold out of circulation, they were able to use the U.S. dollar as a global currency. Still to this day, about 80% or more of all the global transactions are in dollars. And
right.
They can print as many as they want, and nobody has the gold to stand up to that.
Right.
That's the whole secret behind what this was about. Now, of course, in order to maintain such a nefarious plan, they have to have massive surveillance, because anybody that starts to stand up to the plan, they got to try to hammer it down.
Right.
And so as people are starting to realize that there's this massive surveillance out there, what they haven't figured out yet is, okay, why are they so afraid of us? Judicial due process should be good enough to apprehend criminals. The Constitution protects us against unreasonable search and seizure in the Fourth Amendment.
Right.
So what the hell are they doing listening to everybody's phone call? you know, is it really necessary for them to capture every single piece of information? And I believe the answer is no. And as I'm sure, Lorraine, you may have noticed, in the book I have two chapters dedicated to the cycle between Rome and the U.S.